Before we get to Closet to the Beaches question, one thing I do have to ask, and I probably should have asked this years ago, because I've been competing in these events for, well, my first one was Hackfest 2019.
I think that was the first time I judged too. Yeah, it was.
We got second place, and the team that beat us was the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. So, you know, I'm totally cool taking second place to them. Part of the time I was away competing in the SECTF, despite not speaking French at the time, which was cool. We got something that was, it was really close to, like, we submitted as location. And if I could have pinpointed like two other data points, we would have got the 5,000 points and won. But instead it got downgraded. It was stronger than Day Last Seen, so it got downgraded to Dark Web. In the, all the time that I've competed, I've never asked this question. What do the reports look like on the other side? Do you like just dump the database, or do you actually write a narrative around it?
I'll give a little bit of a, you know, tip of the hand, because we are asking for more report writers, volunteers. So we do, we clean up the data. And so everything that's submitted, we don't submit the raw data. We clean it up a little bit. Human Decoded has some Python magic. They've now gone to receiving that and kind of a executive summary is how the approach we're doing. We used to do the aspect that we didn't provide them with the cleaned up data. We just did a very large report. That was a lot of work to the reporting team to take all those pieces of information and articulate all of the important things into a document that often got double digits and pages long. Talked with law enforcement. Again, this did also work out well, testing this with New Zealand law enforcement. The raw data, they can understand that. And then they just want like an executive summary that says, you know, 1 to 2 pager that says, okay, what are the high points? What do I need to jump into first? And they go, if you give us enough of an explanation, we can look at that, look at the raw data that comes through in a CSV, a cleaned up CSV. And if they have questions and they want us to write that large thing, then we can. Because it really comes down to the point, and I saw this, you know, again, with the investigators, they have, New Zealand did the thing where they did let the families know that they were doing that work. So there was a quick turnaround on the reports. So because you have investigators waiting on them, and because they have families waiting on them. So we wanted to accelerate that process a little bit more, and that raw data and an executive summary allows us to kind of get it turned around in a couple of days. And I've stated that in the call for a report writer, saying that that's really the most difficult part of it is I'm going to give you about 48 hours to turn this around and only spend about an hour or so working on it, doing, you know, you have one case, you have all the data that's there in front of you, just summarize the high points. If you had 1 hour to prepare to give a 10-minute summary on what you see, what would you write? You know, what would that be? So we're hoping that that process works instead of having the long, you know, eloquent ones where all you're doing is you're just telling them what's in the database when they have analysts to do that themselves. Hopefully that answers your question, Joe, is what like the reports sort of look like on the other end.
That's exactly it, because admittedly, I've had students ask me, hey, what does it look like on the other end? I'm like, and my response was either a dump or a written narrative. I'm not entirely sure. I've never been involved with that.
We were doing like a full written narrative. And that's the thing is that if we just have a backlog of stuff, that slows everything down. We can't do a bunch of cases and ongoing operations and do a CTF every other week if we're not getting the reports out. So if we start refining that and getting those quick turnarounds, if we can turn around a report within a week, you know, deliver them a report and everything within a week of holding the event, then we can start accelerating into doing more events.
Getting to Closet to the Beaches question about screenshots, is there a special format to submit screenshots? For example, they use Microsoft Word to copy screenshots. Would they attach the doc file? I think I know the answer, but I feel like I've been yapping a lot, so I'm going to let someone else take the reins on that.
Yeah, stop talking, Joe. It's not like it's your channel or anything.
Well, it's not even that. It's I have ADHD. I'm trying to go into the Navy Reserve, so therefore I can't take medication for it. And I'm on my second venti cup of Starbucks.
That last one was a choice.
Well, yeah. I mean, Starbucks is my blood type. I ran out of the house 5 hours ago and got 2 ventis, and the second one's almost done.
I hope you have stock in their company.
Yeah. So answering the file uploads again, guarding against all the wonderful hackers out there, I think we just take it as image files right now. You can't upload a Word document or a PDF. That might be something that we look into as well. I believe there's still some filtering and some different documents that we can do. If, however, you have a large item that might be best articulated through a PDF or a Word document, we might be able to work out getting that sent over. We have had a couple of entries that are best explained in a document, but with your screenshot, there's really no limit to the amount of things that you can just collage onto a screenshot. We've had people build entire timelines that have, okay, here's different pictures, different items, and you build this timeline, and then you say, okay, here on the timeline is where they went missing, and here's the stuff that happened afterwards, and you just lay it all out, multiple items that are on an image. Yeah, that's outstanding. We'll take that. You know, or things that have one screenshot with a circle around it going out over to another screenshot and showing how they link and get you to that final point. Yeah, it's multiple screenshots just all in one image. Right now, we only allow you to put like one image to a submission, but there's no, you can put as much as you want into that image.
I've got some ideas on how we could accomplish that. I'll talk to you all about after the competition.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's a good idea because I, looking at this from my area, I would want more than just the one image, maybe more than, because especially for a judge, depending on what it is they're submitting, you might not need to do all those circles, but you still want to collect everything. And so a judge might not know how to process the same thing, even if the whole site, for example, might be warranted of screenshots because it's volatile. I agree. I think we should talk about that.
What other solid points of frustration or discussion do we want to discuss? I'm seeing MS Paint is your friend. If you're on a Windows box, you know, I'm looking at you with a little bit of side eye, but I agree. But for me on a Mac, I use a tool called MonoSnap. I can either choose the screenshot area or I can screenshot everything. And then from there, I can go in and apply arrows and boxes and whatever. Something that's very important, that this is also something out of the report writing class that's somewhat applicable to the competition as well. Be cautious on your color choices that you're using to highlight things with like circles and boxes and arrows and stuff for two reasons. You want to make sure you have a high contrast, a high image contrast, so it's easy to see. But at the same time, it's also more accessible. Some of you already know this, but does anyone know why I use yellow and black for the Ascension? There's actually a reason behind this.
Yeah,
is it just the high contrast?
Bumblebees.
No, it has nothing to do with bumblebees. It has everything to do with, a few years ago, I was helping a friend out with a book, and you're exactly right there, Closet to the Beach. I'm not a Wiz Khalifa fan. In fact, I'd probably be, with looking at the Ascension logo, I refer to that as the Jack Johnson era, because I lived in Hawaii when that album came out. I was helping somebody write some stuff for a book, and he's like, I'm colorblind. I was like, okay, cool. He's like, I need you to do it on a yellow background with black font. Okay, sure. And he explained that that is the most accessible color scheme across all color blindness that there is. So I'm not saying alter your images, colors and stuff, but be cautious of the choices you make in what you do. So that's why I go yellow and black. I learned last year at B-Sides Rochester when I was presenting training in front of an LED panel. Yellow is a terrible color to pick for that because it creates the most heat. It was freezing cold, below freezing outside, and I was ready to break out the tank top and shorts before lunch.
Black Hills Information Security did a good webinar on all these same points for screenshots and contrast, and you don't need to have a giant screenshot in it that has a lot of, you know, information. You know, and also don't burn your stock accounts because you submitted a screenshot. Be sure to have things appropriately redacted. I don't need to see the information on it, on what accounts you're using to access your stuff. So, you know, I use ShareX as a Windows tool. And I think that's one that we share with the judges to share with their teams. Yeah, the window snipping tool is great. I usually do that to get my initial screenshot and then open it up in ShareX to redact things and highlight appropriately and make sure that as big of fans as we are of dark mode, sometimes switching things out of dark mode in order to take a screenshot will benefit in the long run.
Exactly. And sometimes, like to Levy's point in the chat, don't overdo it with marking something up to make it look fancy. You're not a graphic designer. Sometimes less is more. Put the minimum amount of stuff into your screenshots to get the maximum amount of the point across, to get points on your scoreboard. That's what you ultimately are trying to do.
And even if you are a graphic designer, don't be for the competition.
Exactly. Don't worry about being fancy. Don't worry about cleaning things up. If you're writing a proper report, then put a little bit more effort into it, but still don't worry about trying to be all razzle dazzle. Worry about having a consistent font. Worry about having alignment with all of your images. Like I center all of my images, try to keep all your images at the same size. That's what it boils down to. Oh, Levy, no, we didn't recruit you to maintain the chat.
I think this is a good point to segue into which rabbit holes are worthwhile exploring. Time I decided I would create a map of all the last seen places for this human and then determine what quadrant they might be in. And I spent like 15 minutes making the most gorgeous map to ever be submitted in a flag in a Trace Labs competition, only to get a, this isn't relevant, denied.
So you're the one that won the MCO badge, the most complicated OSIM.
Yes.
Yeah, basically. Always. I didn't actually get anything out of that other than shame. But
send me your address, or I'll just get your address. Who am I kidding? I'll send you a yellow sticky of appreciation. How's that?
There we go.
A gold star. You tried.
So Joe's making a joke because after we won the black badge, I was like, we need like a physical black badge though. So I went and I found a maker on Etsy to create like hang around your neck physical black badges using the Trace Labs digital badge as the image with permission. And I had these made and then shipped them out to each one of the members of the password inspection agency so we could have a tangible representation of the win. Because to be fair, Joe and I were very persistent in our attempts to win this black badge. It took us several competitions to finally nail it to a wall. So
we wanted to celebrate. That was even, you know, back in the day where we were awarding the black badge to the highest point totals, and we had shifted that to, you know, hey, the most valuable OSINT gets that black badge, which, you know, still retroactively the people that have the black badges, outstanding. But I can understand where there would be some frustration in trying to eke out enough points to take the top. So doing the chasing down rabbit holes like that's been valuable, because even if you don't make the MBO award, those are all things that you know, blow away law enforcement going, you know, hey, they built this timeline. I can't believe they did that. They took the time to put together like a map of everything and just you know, laid out you know, in front of them, and they're amazed. And those are the types of rabbit holes that most MBOs have been, is not just in the natural observation where you're digging down this rabbit hole, but then also in the context and the validation. We had a couple of the entries to where, you know, several people found them, but only one had really ran the details to ground and articulated all of that and found that linkage and said, hey, I'm gonna explore and dig up the photographer's site and portfolio. And then you hit this whole gold mine of, you know, validation that the person is safe and secure, because you have the photographer's website that had all the photos and videos and had plenty of EXIF data on there because it was a personal site and didn't scrub the EXIF data. So you had a lot of that digging the rabbit holes, when some people may have just taken it as the Facebook post saying, hey, they're safe and sound, and going there, I'm just going to point to that saying they're good. So really those differentiators are what, one, is valuable to law enforcement, and then two, that's really going to distinguish for that MBO. And those are the types of things we want to encourage, is digging down those rabbit holes and articulating a good report.
I don't want to sound like a corny grade school teacher, but, you know, the difference between ordinary and extraordinary is the extra effort. I'm going to briefly be braggadocious here, because I actually have all of the black badges handy. This is like the whole stash of black badges, including the DerbyCon one, but, and Exor also threw in a badge for the password inspection agency, but these are the ones that Aleith is referring to. So all of those. And then to the point about the map, right here is actually a SANS Forensics 500 Lethal Forensicator coin, which I consider to also be a black badge. But the way I got it was during the CTF portion of that course, what ended up happening was, oh yeah, chains for days. In that course, what ended up happening is we were tracing someone in a fictional scenario. I used OSINT to win because what happened was we knew that they were going from like this place to another place. And I plotted it on Google Earth and we had to give a presentation. So I exported the KML and put the KML in the PowerPoint. Honestly, that might be a good idea as well on behalf of Trace Labs to accept KML files as an upload.
Blue said no.
No. Oh, no, we can like we can really do anything. You just need to have the resources and whoever's working on the back end to develop it. And also trusting our people to not upload malicious attachments.
Well, yeah, that's true. It could be kind of like the Onion site type thing where only certain judges review that. Like I tell students straight up, if you're going to submit a dark web flag, it has to be an Onion site. There's about a 90% chance that whoever your judge is for competition is not going to be the judge that reviews it. And of that large percentage of possibility of it not being your judge, there's a greater than 75% chance that it's going to be Levy, and Levy is going to be fair, but very strict and thorough on it.
Yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a senior judge or someone that is a lot stricter that's reviewing the dark web content.
Human Decoded suggested that we talk about team communications and dynamics, I believe it was the exact phrase. Coordinate as a team. That's very interesting. Aleith, I'll let you start and then I'll fill in any holes, I suppose.
Which part do you want me to cover?
Coordinating as a team.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. So Joe and I kind of developed this through our experience, kind of leading a team together. And that is that we would sit as a group of four and determine which of the target humans, missing persons, looked most appealing to each one of us to attempt to OSINT. Because if you're enthusiastic about helping to find someone, you're more likely to find good things. And so we'd allow everybody to kind of call dibs on the case that they wanted to tackle first. And then each person would tackle their case exclusively and not move off of their person unless they notified the group, hey, it's been like 15 or 20 minutes. I'm not finding anything on this person. I think I'm going to move over to this other person instead and try that one. And keeping that line of communication open so that no two people were working on the same case. And if somebody switched to a case that was previously abandoned, they had, you know, the background on that and could kind of carry the investigation further, help to prevent us from submitting duplicate flags. And it also helps keep each of us engaged in the work that we're doing for the individual that we're hoping to find information about. So that's how we would manage it, is each person would take a case and then work exclusively on that case unless they threw up the white flag and decided to shift to someone else. But we would keep an internal team's communication platform open, whether that's an audio channel in Discord or just a chat channel in Discord or text message or wherever you're most comfortable, signal messaging your team, for example. Yeah, Zoom is another good one. I've sat on audio channels in Discord with teammates who wanted to sing the music that they were listening to in their headphones for 6 hours. So there's, you know, you find the best way that works for your team and what everybody's comfortable with. But that kind of helped us feel like we were all in the same room together, and it made collaboration as easy as unmuting ourselves, which was nice. Joe and I joke about getting our snacks and our adult diapers ready, because when we started competitions, we were not messing around. We were not taking extended breaks other than to maybe run to the restroom or grab another snack.
Yeah, it gets tricky as an admin and stuff too, to where you go, it's like, man, we're just
right.
We're just sitting here doing all this thing, but then you decide to get up out of your seat to go grab some snacks, and you can hear Joe Gray coming down the virtual hall to argue with you. They're like, oh no, here we go.
Yep, exactly. I mean, it's to the point, like in competition, I had a diaper genie to put my adult diapers in,
and oh my gosh,
I rigged a winch that I can order stuff from Grubhub. Like if I need a soda, I'll just have Grubhub go buy me one at the local gas station. And I just have them put it in a bucket and I raise it up to my window. And I'm purely kidding about all of that stuff. What I will say,
no, he's not.
I am with that. Like my playlist is always key. You got to find the music that gets you through as well. Yeah. I mean, that is pretty much the South Park with the World of Warcraft stuff. Like I'm a big fan of like industrial music, like KMFDM, Frontline Assembly, Rammstein, that kind of stuff. Like it just gets me through. Sometimes like some lo-fi. If I hit something that's really tricky, I might even shift to dual core maybe. Yeah. Everything Elith said is definitely very valuable. As a team, I've seen it success in meeting with the team like informally for like 15, 20 minutes, a little bit before the competition, maybe the day before. Make sure you've got everything together. Like if you're going to share stuff on a Google Drive, everybody has access to the drive. If you're going to use Zotero, everybody's got access to the Zotero. If you're going to communicate via Discord, everybody's friend and you've got the group chat going on Discord. You've got all of the stuff put together. And then also like the people that you're most interested in, when you're picking those type of people, I found the best success with like, oh, I used to live in this place. Like I've seen a missing person in Hawaii. That's where I was stationed in the Navy. Cool. Okay. I know the area a little bit. Oh, this person's in St. Louis. I used to live there. Cool. So forth and so on. So if you have a specific tie to the area or there's something about the person within it, like if they're like an indigenous from an indigenous group of people and you are also indigenous, that might be another thing. Anything that you have common ground with that you can understand things that others may not be able to immediately comprehend. That's one thing to look at as well. Communicating when you're shifting people, yes. The group chats, whether that be voice over Discord, Zoom, whatever, all have all that in place. But then also with the password inspection agency, we need to point out Ginsburg here, because like when we were on that team, every time we came across a picture of a cell phone, we just immediately passed the picture to Ginsburg, because that dude is a whiz at identifying the make and model of a phone via reverse image searches. So if somebody on your team has a specific skill set, like it could be speaking a particular language, it could be a particular tool. That's another thing. We also categorized before the event who has access to what APIs and what tools. You know, obviously you're not supposed to use paid tools. There are several free APIs as well. I have access to this API. I have access to that API. You know, I have this, I have that. Having a categorization of that. So, you know, say for example, you're doing a competition and I've seen missing people in the competition be from Southern Texas or Mexico and all their stuff be in Spanish. I don't speak Spanish. I've got browser extensions that can help me with it. But if there's somebody who can natively read Spanish, that's probably a good person for them to take a look at because it saves time. So that's another good step for coordination in the purpose of competition.
Yeah, I had a couple of follow-ons for that. One of the things you said, Joe, is that, you know, everybody is everybody's friend. And that is an important thing to kind of keep in mind, especially with your team and that fifth team member of your judge, is that your judge should be your advocate. That's the thing that we reinforce a lot of times, is that the judge should really be on your side trying to help you make good submissions. You really shouldn't be fighting with your judge. To kind of remember, and I share the Keanu Reeves, Bill and Ted, be excellent to each other. So that's one of the key items there, with it being everybody is everybody's friend. And then also, as Joe said, like you can't use paid tools is only partially correct. You can use paid tools. The submissions need to be publicly available, and you need to articulate how you found them.
You heard there. That, folks. Dehashed and PIMize.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, I mean, can you submit a link to Dehashed and say, hey, it's free? I think Dehashed, you have to pay an artist to get the information. The URL needs to be like freely accessible.
Yeah, no, I kid.
But it'd be the type of thing to where it's like, if you use Dehashed to get a unique password, and then you search that unique password to find another email address that's in a breach, and that other email address that's in a breach is on a paid site, or you use that other email to say, okay, here's another email and I found a completely different profile of them, but that profile picture with that email address, that picture matches what was in the missing persons report. Okay, great. You can go to that final part and say, okay, here's here's a picture that matches, here's the email address that's new and unknown. And yeah, you may have gone through a couple paid tools in order to get there, but the ultimate, you know, output is, you know, hey, you can rationalize it by it's a publicly accessible URL, picture matches, that's how you explain it away. Great, cool. We don't have to run our own, you know, paid tools or paid access in order to validate your information.
With PimEyes, for example, if you drop a picture in PimEyes, yes, that you do get 3 free queries per day. If you're on the paid version of PimEyes and you drop a picture in there, what ends up happening is it actually shows you the link to the source site, which honestly is one of those situations where it's no one would know if you used a paid tool with that because you're getting the source site. You heard it here first. Totally run with it now. I guess I'm going to have to change training now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want it to be, you know, Joe Gray said I can use this paid tool, but it's just, you know.
With exception, you can use paid tools.
Yeah, with exception, you can use paid tools. And it's just if the output is, you know, a site that, you know, is freely accessible, or even in the example that I gave, that you go, in the end, you're getting something that's freely accessible. How did you get it? Through the use of a paid tool. Okay, fine. But at the end, giving that report to the reporting team can validate that by going straight to the source and going to law enforcement. Law enforcement can validate by going to that URL and screenshot that you sent over. We're certainly not going to hamper an investigative values by saying, oh, you know, well, they used a paid tool to get to something that is completely public. We're not going to tell law enforcement about that. You know, still at the end of the day, we're trying to get items of investigative value to law enforcement to gain traction on a case.
And with that being said, I think a very important distinction here is if you try the defense of Joe Gray said, that may not work well for you because Joe Gray is not a Tracelabs staffer. I'm just a close friend of Tracelabs and, for intents and purposes with training, a partner. I hold no position of authority to have any level of weight to be thrown around within Tracelabs. So instead of Joe Gray says, you might want to go with Levy and Ballouf say.
Yeah, that might work out with, you know, well enough. Or Ballouf, you say they could use, like, you know, all these paid tools, and it's like, I don't want to see that. But you under what most people listening to that, it seems like, understand the context.
Yeah.
Ballouf said it was cool.
I say, when in doubt, blame Joe anyway.
Yeah.
If you are interested in on-demand training, check out the Ascension Academy. We currently have 3 courses available. You can bundle all 3 of those courses or 2 of those courses. We have replays of webinars as well as a lot of free content. Visit academy.theascension.com. If you're interested in purchasing courses from The Ascension, you can do so in a variety of ways. The easiest way is the Ascension store, which is at theascension.com/courses/store. You can purchase bundles, individual courses, and placeholders here. If you would like a custom bundle, please email bundles@theascension.com for custom bundles or questions. If you're interested in any of the upcoming live courses, we are teaching on March 4th from noon until 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Practical OPSEC for Intelligence and Privacy. We will be teaching Intelligence Investigations Business on April 1st from noon until 8:30 p.m. On May 6th, we'll be teaching from noon until 4 p.m. the Image Intelligence, Optical Character Recognition, and Video Analysis course. And also on May 6th, we'll be teaching Regular Expressions for Intelligence from 5 to 9 p.m. Eastern. If you'd like to bundle these courses, we offer this in a payment plan and as a one-time payment. There are the links to take care of that. You can follow us on Twitch. osint.mobi/twitch is the redirect. osint.mobi/YouTube is the YouTube redirect. And also, we maintain a couple of communities. On Discord, we maintain the Ascension Discord, which is osint.mobi/Discord. And we are also members of Ascension Intelligence on LinkedIn, which you can join via osint.mobi/Ascension Intelligence. There are the links to my social media as well as the Ascension's.
Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and hit the bell for notifications.